Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Outbreak Atlas by Rebecca Katz and Mackenzie S. Moore. Narrated by Alex Picard. Publisher's note: this audiobook includes bonus material. Please visit tantor.com and type The Outbreak Atlas into the search box. Follow the link to the book's page, then under the supplemental content section, please enter the access code RISK. And then click the unlock button to access the bonus material. The code should be entered in all lowercase letters. A list of acronyms used in this book, a case studies and facts index, and a glossary can be found in the bonus material. In the last few decades, the number of infectious disease outbreaks has more than tripled. Introduction. At the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, our friends and family started asking questions. Lots of questions. We work in pandemic preparedness and response, a field that was considered so niche that most of our family members didn't quite understand what we did for a living. But as the SARS-CoV-2 virus started to spread, people were looking for help understanding what was happening, figuring out how to protect themselves and their loved ones, and making sense of policy decisions. Our friends and family, along with the rest of the population, watched the COVID-19 response with a new level of interest in public health, learning epidemiologic terms, and developing diverse levels of expertise and facilities with the tools used in outbreak response. Terms we taught in graduate-level epidemiology courses were now overheard in banter at the grocery store, under masks and behind plexiglass. Yet the success of the response efforts was uneven. The public was seized by coverage of the pandemic and the decisions made by governments, public health officials, businesses, and communities, but not necessarily provided with a guide to understand the rationale behind the requested or required public health actions. Over previous years, we had curated an interactive online tool for professionals that identifies the activities and actors involved across all phases of an outbreak, capturing what needs to get done, when, and by whom. We created this book to translate the content behind that tool for a broader audience by comprehensively mapping the enormous complexity of outbreak response and detailing the necessary actions required for disease prevention and mitigation. Public health professionals are urgently calling on citizen scientists to engage as outbreaks occur more frequently and in increasingly complex environments, thereby expanding the number of stakeholders and types of activities required to control the spread of disease, and requiring active participation by the impacted populations. Successful outbreak response relies heavily on public support and community engagement. Public engagement comes from an educated public. Access to this information can bolster the participatory process of public health by creating a more informed, engaged population. This book lifts the curtain on the rationale and interconnectedness of actions across different fields and at various levels to respond to disease outbreaks by presenting outbreak activities in a way that ensures a shared understanding of the essential activities to control an outbreak. We hope this book will be of interest to every armchair epidemiologist, public health student, and self-selecting scientist that emerged during the pandemic. Maybe it will even answer some of our family's questions. User's Guide. Think of this book as a guide to the who, what, when, where, why, and how of outbreaks. Outbreaks occur in different places, present in different ways, and require different responses around the world. As a result, there is no exact list followed by governments and responders regarding what goes on before, during, and after an outbreak. We have attempted here to condense our experience in outbreak preparedness and response, along with the guidance and feedback from our colleagues across the globe and from the wide variety of fields involved in epidemics, into a comprehensible guide. As an armchair epidemiologist's guide to outbreaks, we've designed this book to welcome you into the world of outbreaks. You are meant to jump around. Some sections of this book are more interesting than others, and that is okay. Start with what seems interesting to you, whether it is one field of an outbreak response or a specific outbreak case study. You will find that each section connects to another as it happens in real life during a response. The activities involved in detecting, responding, and recovering from outbreaks are interconnected and may occur at different times or in different ways depending on the context of the infectious disease, such as geographic location, mode of transmission, and availability of medicines, responders, and other resources. 1. Epidemiology. Who, what, when, where, why, and how? Epidemiology and public health surveillance are the core of infectious disease research, detection, investigation, and response. Epidemiology is the study of how and why diseases occur within a population. Within this field, scientists use defined methodology to explore a myriad of questions. Who is getting sick? What type of pathogen is causing a disease? Where did the causative agent come from? How does it spread? They identify patterns, examine the frequency of outbreaks, and investigate the risk factors and causes associated with health events. Public health surveillance is one of several valuable tools that feed epidemiological efforts. Surveillance systems capture disease data from a wide variety of sources, notifying health experts of potential outbreaks and providing them with essential information about ongoing disease burden that they can then analyze and use to inform response efforts and inspire future research. In this chapter, we outline how epidemiology works in practice to identify and respond to disease events, including epidemiological investigation, attribution investigation, and public health surveillance. Epidemiological investigation. When an infectious disease outbreak is suspected, a team of epidemiologists initiates an investigation. Disease detectives work to figure out the origin and extent of the infectious disease outbreak. The data and evidence they gather confirms the existence of an outbreak and provides critical information for health and government officials to use in implementing mitigation and control measures. An investigation follows several steps, which may occur concurrently or in different orders depending on the nature of the outbreak and the resources available. This process can also be iterative, with some steps being performed multiple times. 1. Verify the existence of an outbreak. 2. Confirm the diagnosis. 3. Create a case definition. 4. Find and document cases. 5. Perform descriptive epidemiology. 6. Develop hypotheses. 7. Plan and perform additional studies. 8. Implement control and prevention measures. 9. Initiate and/or maintain surveillance. 10. Communicate the results of the epidemiological investigation. Step 1. Verify the existence of an outbreak. Is something happening? The first step in an outbreak investigation is to verify whether there is actually an outbreak. A disease outbreak is defined as an increase in disease occurrence beyond what is normally expected for a particular location, time of year, or population. Signals of an outbreak, case reports from clinics or hospitals, laboratory reports, community rumors, etc., are captured by a public health surveillance system and assessed by a team of disease professionals. They compare the number of cases that would be expected, drawing from health department surveillance records, hospital records, mortality statistics, or clinical reports, to the reported or perceived number and nature of cases. Sometimes this is very easy to do. For example, if there was a single case of smallpox, then you have an outbreak, since you wouldn't expect to see even a single case because it was eradicated decades ago. Sometimes this is hard. Cases of influenza are very common during the winter months. To assess whether something unusual is going on, you would need to look at influenza rates from past winters and compare. Determining whether the detected rise in cases indicates an outbreak is a complicated process. Epidemiologists must verify the signals and assess their authenticity and reliability by gathering additional information, cross-checking sources, and conducting analyses. There are also many non-disease-related factors which can falsely suggest the existence of an outbreak. changes in local reporting processes, changes in case definitions, increased or local national awareness of a disease, or alterations to diagnostic testing procedures could trigger unexpected numbers of reported cases. All possibilities that need to be assessed by the public health team. Once a health team verifies the signal or signals and concludes that there is a possible infectious disease outbreak, they launch an investigation. Case study: pediatric hepatitis cases of unknown etiology in the U.S. and U.K. One of the earliest steps in outbreak investigation is confirming there is actually an outbreak. However, verifying outbreak signals can be extremely difficult, especially early on. In the autumn of 2021, clinicians in the United States noticed a hospital cluster of pediatric hepatitis of unknown origin, and similar case data was coming from the United Kingdom. In both countries, pathogen testing showed that many of the cases also tested positive for adenovirus, specifically a type of adenovirus that typically causes gastroenteritis, think really bad stomach aches, which had not been associated with hepatitis cases in healthy children. To establish the existence of an outbreak, public health scientists collected data and analyzed trends on pediatric hepatitis, related hospitalizations, emergency department visits, liver transplants, and the percentage of positive adenovirus samples among children in the U.S. They compared case numbers to a pre-pandemic baseline to account for the potential changes in healthcare-seeking behavior from 2020 to 2022 during the COVID-19 pandemic. Initial analysis of the data suggested that there was not an increase in pediatric hepatitis cases or adenovirus compared to the pre-pandemic baseline, and thus scientists reported in June 2022 that there was no actual outbreak of pediatric hepatitis in the U.S. Researchers clearly listed the challenges associated with determining the existence of an outbreak of acute pediatric hepatitis, notably the gaps in data coverage, lag between hospitalization outcome and report, and using pediatric hepatitis of unspecified etiology as a proxy. Additionally, they noted this was a rare condition, and analyses of big data sets could miss small but important trend changes. This was especially impacted by the effects the pandemic had on changing healthcare-seeking behavior. But the case was not solved. New case reports and data from 11 countries around Europe suggested this was, in fact, a new problem, and investigations continued. Further investigation in the U.S. and retrospective case identification by December 2023 revealed an additional 290 cases, bringing the total case count in the U.S. to 401, compared to 111 in May 2022. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, U.S. CDC, issued a nationwide request for clinicians and public health authorities to report any cases of children under the age of 10 with particular laboratory results and unknown etiology for clinical hepatitis. Investigators continue to conduct surveillance, monitor case trends, and explore the possible role of concurrent or previous adenovirus and/or SARS-CoV-2 infection on new hepatitis cases. Step 2. Confirm the diagnosis. What is the something that is happening? Initial identification of cases in an outbreak may come from clinician reports of patients' signs and symptoms or diagnostic laboratories, all providing information that then needs to be further explored through an epidemiologic investigation. Confirming disease diagnosis, which means ruling out any clinical misdiagnosis or laboratory error, enables clinicians to optimize treatment decisions and allows for effective disease-specific control measures. To confirm diagnosis, health officers review and verify individuals' clinical histories, bolstering data with additional case, family member, and physician interviews to capture additional details on possible etiology and transmission. They also may collect samples from the patients and/or the environment for laboratory processing. This can include samples of sputum, spit, blood, stool, or food or water samples following established sample collection, transport, and diagnostic protocols. There are many laboratory methods for identifying and typing a pathogen, including microscopy, antigen detection, and serology, as well as analysis of DNA or other chemical or biological fingerprinting. Laboratory diagnosis is important to avoid incorrectly attributing the etiology of an outbreak, particularly when so many disease agents cause general or unclear clinical symptoms. In cases where an outbreak is caused by a known pathogen, health professionals diagnose cases based on already established case definitions and approved laboratory diagnostics. When an outbreak has an unknown etiology or is caused by a novel pathogen, initial diagnoses may be uncertain and laboratory confirmation may not be possible. In these situations, confirming disease diagnosis may just include meeting the clinical case definition and being epidemiologically linked to another confirmed case. Step 3. Create a case definition. Can we describe the something that is happening? Case definitions standardize criteria used by epidemiologists and health personnel to identify and classify cases. There are three categories of case definitions: suspected, probable, or confirmed cases, based on clinical, laboratory, and situational criteria. Suspected cases display typical clinical features without laboratory results or epidemiologic information. Probable cases show typical clinical features of the illness and have an epidemiologic link to another laboratory-confirmed case, but are not laboratory-confirmed. And confirmed cases have laboratory confirmation of the agent through isolation of the causative agent or a positive serological test. Clinical criteria include a combination of symptoms, physical signs, etiologic agents, and confirmatory diagnostic tests. Laboratory criteria can include presence of pathogen type or subtype, serologic evidence, and detection of specific levels of antibodies or antigens in a sample. Importantly, laboratory criteria might also include the absence of another pathogen that might otherwise explain symptoms, such as testing negative for malaria. A case definition can also include criteria relating to the person, place, and time. Person describes key characteristics the patients share, such as age, sex, race, and occupation. Place describes a specific geographic location or facility associated with the outbreak. Time delineates a period of time associated with the illness onset for the cases under investigation. Limiting the period enables exclusion of similar illnesses that are unrelated to the outbreak of interest. Case definitions may also identify the at-risk population, meaning the group of individuals who have an increased potential of contracting the disease by either being exposed to the infectious agent or being especially susceptible to the disease. Factors that impact risk of exposure include the geographic location, social groupings, occupation, immunization status, age, or gender. Factors that can increase susceptibility to a disease may include immune status of a population, comorbidities, behaviors like smoking, or other conditions such as pregnancy. Constructing a case definition requires balancing between including all possible cases, sensitivity, and excluding persons without the disease, specificity. During the early stages of an outbreak investigation, when the goal is to identify as many cases as possible, a more sensitive case definition may be used. While a sensitive case definition increases the likelihood of detecting cases, it may also count individuals who do not have the disease as cases. A specific case definition is often more resource-dependent as it can rely on diagnostic or laboratory confirmation, but it minimizes false positives by including only confirmed cases. However, it is possible to miss some cases with a highly specific case definition. The components of a case definition may vary depending on the nature of each outbreak, and the case definition may be modified as the outbreak evolves. Early on in an outbreak, interim case definitions may be issued and then updated as more information becomes available. For example, a case definition might be changed to include a more specific laboratory component as new diagnostics are developed or an exposure source is identified. Simplified case definition. Sometimes it is helpful to create simplified or community case definitions. These are clear and concise versions that use key signs and easily identified symptoms of the disease or public health event to help the public recognize when a person should seek testing or treatment at a health facility or notify local health personnel of a suspected case. The advantage of using community case definitions is that they are simpler and broader, lower specificity, than standard case definitions, which means that more suspected or probable cases will be identified and fewer cases will be missed. Simplified case definitions are a key part of improving community-based surveillance, CBS, and actively engaging the community in detecting, reporting, monitoring, and responding to health events. The community case definitions, though, are often overly broad and will capture lots of potential cases that can then be ruled in or out based on the more technical definitions. Examples of standard case definition versus community case definition. This table compares some standard case definitions with community case definitions to illustrate the differences. Disease. Yellow fever. Standard case definition. Suspected case. Any person with acute onset of fever, with jaundice appearing within 14 days of onset of the first symptoms. Probable case. A suspected case and one of the following. A. Epidemiological link to a confirmed case or an outbreak. Or B. Positive postmortem liver histopathology. Community case definition. Any person who has fever and two or more other symptoms, headache, vomiting, running stomach, weak in the body, yellow eyes, or who died after serious sickness with fever or bleeding. Disease. Typhoid fever. Standard case definition. Suspected case. Any person with gradual onset of steadily increasing and then persistently high fever, chills, malaise, headache, sore throat, cough, and sometimes abdominal pain and constipation or diarrhea. Confirmed case. Suspected case confirmed by isolation of Salmonella typhi from blood, bone marrow, bowel fluid, or stool. Community case definition. Any person with a prolonged fever during the previous 3 weeks or more. Disease. Measles. Standard case definition. Suspected case. Any person with fever and maculopapular non-vesicular generalized rash and cough, coryza, or conjunctivitis, red eyes, or any person in whom a clinician suspects measles. Confirmed case. A suspected case with laboratory confirmation, positive IgM antibody, or epidemiological link to confirmed cases in an outbreak. Community case definition. Any person with fever and rash. Step 4. Find and document cases. Where are the cases, and what do we know about them? Field epidemiology comes into practice once the investigation team begins actively searching for cases and gathering information. When cases are identified, they are interviewed, and contact tracing begins. If the patient is deceased, relatives may be interviewed, or information may be taken from medical records. Information on the suspected, probable, and possible cases and contacts is organized and managed in lists to inform the ongoing investigation, develop hypotheses, and provide data for additional studies. Active case finding. Using the specified case definition, public health investigators actively search for and identify as many cases as possible in order to establish the magnitude and scope of the outbreak. To find cases, outbreak investigative teams review hospital and clinic records, laboratory reports, surveillance reports, and public reporting systems. The first stages of active case finding are often done in partnership with healthcare practitioners and facilities where diagnoses are made. In some communities, informal or unregulated healthcare providers or traditional healers may be the best sources of information for finding cases. Public health workers contact local clinical and laboratory professionals to collect information on any additional cases. They may even go door-to-door if an entire community might be at risk. When individuals matching the case definition are identified, they are interviewed. Interviewing initial cases. Public health officials attempt to interview initial cases as soon as possible in order to increase the probability of identifying epidemiologic links between cases and possible exposure. Epidemiologists often utilize questionnaires or interview guides during case and contact investigation to standardize data collection. Questionnaires may be administered by an interviewer or self-administered by cases and contacts, either electronically or on paper. Interviewing initial cases is a key step during the early stages of the outbreak investigation to gather information that can be used to generate hypotheses about the origin and type of disease and help investigators understand important factors like how someone became infected. The following types of information from cases and/or contacts is gathered during interviews. Demographic and identifying data, age, sex, location, occupation. Clinical history, date of onset, duration, and severity of symptoms. Contact history and risk factor information, contact with other ill persons, food consumption history, travel history, possible initial exposure. Contact tracing. Contact tracing is a core strategy during early outbreak investigation and response to interrupt chains of transmission. It is a public health tool used to identify individuals, contacts, who may have had contact with an infected person, case, notifying them of their exposure, monitoring them for symptoms, and providing additional support so that they may avoid possibly transmitting the disease to others. Identifying contacts of confirmed cases is the first step in contact tracing. Contacts can be anyone who has been in contact with an infected person, family members, work colleagues, friends, or healthcare providers. Contact tracing is triggered when a probable or confirmed case or other source of infection, e.g., mass gathering, food source, is identified. Contacts are identified during interviews with confirmed cases or analysis of deceased cases information and interviews with their family. Trained contact tracing teams then reach out to identified contacts either through in-person home visits or virtually via phone or video calls. Once they reach an identified contact, a member of the contact tracing team confirms an individual's exposure, assesses whether they have any symptoms, and provides the contact with preventative behavioral guidelines to limit the risk of further exposing people around them. Contacts continue to be monitored for symptom development and are given information about how to report and seek care should they develop symptoms. In some situations, quarantine, either at home or in a hospital or other special facility, is required for contacts who are at particularly high risk of becoming ill. In these situations, contacts should be provided with guidance for how to best self-quarantine and given information about any additional support that may be available, like food delivery. Contact listing. Contact tracers keep track of identified contacts using a standardized, usually electronic, contact listing form where data is entered, managed, and analyzed. Contact follow-up. A team of contact tracers and public health staff follow up with all listed contacts either in person or via phone to monitor for symptoms, test for signs of infection, and provide additional support. If a contact develops symptoms during the established monitoring period based on date of exposure, they are then guided to test, isolate, or seek other treatment, depending on the nature of the disease. Once a contact is considered a confirmed case, health personnel initiate contact tracing for that case, and the cycle starts again. Case study: contact tracing during the West African Ebola outbreak. During the 2014 through 2016 West African Ebola virus disease, EVD, outbreak, contact tracing was a key strategy used to contain the spread of disease by identifying and isolating potential EVD cases. Contact tracing for EVD began with the identification of each person an Ebola patient came into contact with. Health workers notified the contacts of their exposure and followed up with them daily for 21 days after their last exposure to EVD, the duration of the maximum incubation period of the virus. During follow-up visits, health workers monitored contacts' temperatures and symptoms, and symptomatic contacts were transported to a treatment center or hospital for testing and isolation if needed. By removing suspected cases from environments in which they could easily infect others, the goal was to stop transmission and eventually contain the outbreak. While contact tracing is a major epidemiological strategy to control the spread of disease and has demonstrated effectiveness in successfully containing EVD outbreaks, A combination of factors complicated contact tracing efforts during the West African EVD outbreak, minimizing its effect.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?